Welcome to Manager Tools. The Manager Tools Data One-on-Ones, Part 2. This cast answers these questions. What data do you have to support the use of one-on-ones? What do tests show of one-on-ones? What do the data say about the frequency of one-on-ones? Well, if you want answers to those questions and more, and you do, believe me, keep listening. Here we go.
If you're in Europe and have been waiting for a chance to attend a Manager Tools conference, here it is. We'll be in London, near Heathrow Airport, on February 5th and 6th with our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences. This event sold out last year, so don't hesitate. Guarantee yourself a seat today by registering for the event at manager-tools.com/training. I hope to see you there.
Okay, all that said, the power in that statement is we don't have to pursue 15 or 20 different strategies or initiatives to make a big difference in our report card. It's easy. Work on that one, even if you don't like it. You high D's, you high C's, we know you don't like it. And I'm sorry, you got to do it. Now, look, you can do other things and you'll move the needle, but not as fast. And as busy as everybody says they are, you really got to work on the big lever. Now, look, after we say that, again, this is not our data. This is management science. The rest of the Trinity behaviors cascade from there. Talking about performance, the second part in the Trinity, represents 30% of our top four's 75% of the total. That means our two most important behaviors, getting to know our directs and talking to them about their performance, represent 70%, 40 plus 30, of 75% of our results and retention goal. That means slightly greater than half of our goal can usually be achieved by focusing on only two behaviors. And I think it's classically why management is ridiculed and why when somebody, as people are always asking about the silver bullet, and those of you who are licensees know that a few weeks ago, I wrote in Things I Think, if you're looking for an analogy for management, it's not a silver bullet, it's Sisyphus, which is you're always rolling the stone up here forever to have it roll back down. It's Sisyphean that the two behaviors that can make the most difference are two behaviors managers generally don't want to engage in. It's because we'd rather search for our keys under the streetlight where the light is good rather than where we might have lost them. The last two of the Trinity, asking for more and pushing work down, each represent roughly 15% each. One's 16 and one's 14, but not worth talking about. So that's roughly 11% each of our total ability to make a difference, 15% times 75%, okay? And they are the last of the four behaviors that register in double digits. Let's say you wanted to focus on the fifth behavior, which is, let's say, worth 9%. And maybe you wanted to work on the sixth and the seventh and the eighth out of the 15 that represent the 97% of your ability to get things done based on correlations, okay? If you're working at 9 and 8, remember the top two behaviors represent 70. You can't get there with 9 plus 8 plus 7 plus 6 plus 5 plus 4 plus 3. You can't. There's no way. You'd spend your time working on a lot of stuff, literally ignoring the two that have the biggest leverage. Now, one more time, guys. It's important to note here, these aren't Manager Tools data. This is all fairly well-established management science. And hopefully you've noticed, none of the Manager Tools Trinity tools, one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, delegation, have we mentioned yet. That's because the behaviors management science has determined have the most impact on results and retention don't require you to achieve these behavioral outcomes using our tools. You don't need to use Manager Tools one-on-ones to get to know your team. You don't need to use the Manager Tools feedback model to give communication about about performance to your directs. You don't need to use the Manager Tools coaching model to ask for more. And you don't need to use the Manager Tools delegation model to push work down. Heck, you can try almost whatever technique you'd like in these four major areas. It could be anything you want. If you think it's going to make a difference, think of your life as a manager as somewhat of an experiment because nobody told you the answer, right? At least if you were doing geometry problems, you already got taught geometry, but nobody taught you this stuff. So you might as well be willing to try some things. Of course, Unfortunately, Mike, you and I both know that falls on deaf ears because people, the first thing they're going to say is, oh, I don't know what to do. My first default is do nothing because I can't get in trouble for doing nothing. And my company has no evidence. There's no evidence my company is going to fire me for doing nothing. I might get fired because I don't move the needle, but at least I won't get in trouble for the behaviors that led me there.
Yeah. The first option, first default is do nothing. And the second default is to have beer on Friday nights. Wouldn't it?
Yes, exactly. Let's make everybody feel better. Yeah. The almost is a caveat, really, that leads to a cautionary bit of guidance. The caveat here is that whatever technique or behaviors you engage in must be teachable to others. That is to say, you must be able to groom a successor for your role. At a sort of rudimentary level, you need to be able to share what you do and how you do it and why you do it with your team. Because if you can't train your replacement, you both reduce your internal mobility because you're replaceable, and you contribute to a systemic problem of managerial talent friction, in addition to the fact that your people don't get developed. And so the organization is not growing in capability, which capability improvements usually lead to productivity improvements, which is the ultimate measurement internally for companies. The caution here is that the vast majority of managers have no externally teachable or even communicable set of behaviors that they repeatedly engage in as managers. Now, I'm not saying you don't have rules of thumb for dealing with certain situations. Most of us do. What I'm saying is the data show that the vast majority of managers don't have a teachable, repeatable, measurable behavior a set of stuff to address the four most powerful behaviors managers can engage in. And I usually teach this by giving an anecdote or an example where a common way this manifests itself is a manager who thinks of her success as a manager as being based on her personality. You know, the phrases are, you know, she's a natural. You know, she's good with people. She likes getting to know people. She's smart. She's quick. She knows where the bodies are buried or whatever. Now, if you imagine that her number two on her team is a relatively quiet, somewhat introverted engineer, and then you imagine her going up to her and saying, hey, boss, what makes you such a good manager? You know, I like working for you. I've been thinking maybe I want to be a manager. And she says, oh, that's easy, Mark. I like people. I like getting to know them. I like spending time with them. I like chatting with them. I earn their trust with a personal connection. And people like working for me because I'm fair, I'm honest, and I'm an open communicator. And that's true. But she's basically telling her introverted engineer number two, you don't have the right temperament to be a good manager.
Which is wrong.
Well, yeah, it's wrong. I don't care what people's personality is. Look, when it comes to management, okay, you need to be ethical. Actually, you can get away with not being ethical for a long time. You need to be ethical. And yeah, there's some correlation between being nice. Okay? But if you're telling people it's your personality, that's not sustainable for people with a different personality than you. And your organization would say, don't do that. Otherwise, why would we try to train people? If it's just personality, you're not going to train somebody to a new personality. That's why I start the conference often and I say, I don't care if you're outgoing or not. I don't care if you're a geek. I don't care if you're smart. I don't even care if you're not smart. Just do these behaviors. And that's the beauty. Manager Tools, one of the underlying themes is we teach the democratization of management. You don't have to be a particular personality. You don't have to be from a particular socioeconomic class. You don't have to look a certain way. You don't have to dress a certain way. There are certain behaviors that form a discipline that will make you effective. I love it when somebody engages in the right behaviors. And let's be honest, guys, they don't look right. They don't sound right. They're not from the same place as some of the schools that other people in the organization go for, and they outperform. Why? Because they engage in the right behaviors.
When Mark first said this to me, I don't know, 30 years ago, whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
Time,
yeah.
Long time ago. I was like, finally, I have hope.
Yeah.
I can do it too.
Well, I felt the same way when I learned this. First, I was frustrated. I can't believe nobody told me this. Who would keep this from somebody? What? In fact, it just occurred to me now, that may be the thing. Managers are like, they're always saying like, somebody knows, you know, that guy up there, he knows. Actually, no, they don't. But there is something some of us know. That's the whole point of manager tools, is to make sure everybody knows. And then let's make it a race about behaviors, about ethical, sustainable, repeatable behaviors. Talk about the elimination of the joke of management, right? The pointy-haired boss. If everybody understood it, if management to a great degree was reduced to something akin to geometry, but still required human connection in the form of trust, so robots aren't going to manage people. It's not going to happen. Look, at Manager Tools predecessor, my company, before Mike and I started Manager Tools, we built tools that address the core managerial behaviors that lead us to results and retention. How did that happen? Well, we consulted with clients. It was a consulting and training firm. And then we trained managers and we created tools and ideas and then iterated on our models. We gathered data about their effect on results and retention. We tested different models, some stupid, some not. We tested different techniques. We spent a lot of time. We're not going to talk about it here. We may at some point. We have a lot of data about meetings because people said to us, our meetings are terrible. And we've gathered reams and reams and reams of data. Over the last 30 years, we've gathered data on the behaviors and outcomes of over 600,000 managers in multiple studies and surveys. Basically around 175,000 in studies, and then we've surveyed further as well. The managers we studied worked in statistically significant numbers in every major industrial classification we're aware of. There are three or four different ways. The government classifies things one way, the Fortune 1000 classifies them a little different, and then industries do it differently and so on. But of all the ones we're aware of, whether you look at 30 or 45 or 62 or whatever, we've looked at hundreds, if not thousands, in every one of those cases. They worked on every continent in the world except Antarctica. And technically, it's possible that one of the people in our surveys actually did this stuff in Antarctica. It was one of the remote managers, and we were getting data about essentially a manager who was blind to us. For all I know, he or she was in Antarctica. Seriously, someday we're going to do a study in Antarctica so I can say on every continent in the world. We've measured and tested managers from heavy industry, supervising hourly day workers with spans of control up to 50, to high-tech managers managing fellows with advanced degrees and managing just one or two. Full disclosure, if a person's title was manager, we didn't necessarily study them. They needed to have direct reports. We've conducted studies on CEOs and every other level of executive. We've measured and followed tens of thousands of managers in academia and government and nonprofits, hospitals, charities, religious organizations, medical practices, retail firms like grocery stores and mall-based clothing stores. We've measured over 250,000 managers in the Fortune 500 alone. Airlines, chip-making fabs, software firms, agricultural chemical firms, family farm cooperatives, Wall Street financial firms, banks, federal, state, local governments, cruise ship companies, every major cabinet division at the U.S. federal level, police departments, fire departments, video game developers, every branch of the U.S. armed forces, construction materials firms, home builders, business associations, small and large, individual dentist offices. It was a very successful dentist office they could afford us. Huge merchant banks, 5 foreign governments, both supporting operations of elected officials and executive branch divisions, governmental foreign services, the United Nations, major sports leagues. And I'm just cherry picking, okay? It is funny to me, and I admit, guys, 13, 14 years ago, before we had the following that we have, and I realize I have to be careful about what I say.
And by the way, just curious, this is inside baseball, I'm sorry. But when I was at your house on Monday, we were meeting, we had a partner one-on-one. So we do one-on-ones, guys. Partner one-on-one on Monday at Mark's house. And you got a text, I'll leave his name off, but he's a coach of an NFL football team. I assume he is not, or is he the major sport teammate?
No. No, okay. No, he's just a friend. get this. He's a All-American college player, won a Super Bowl, and is now a coach. And he is way interested in management. So when we get together, we play golf. I ask him questions about football, and it's awesome. And then he asked me questions about management.
And he's a great guy, right? I mean, people have this idea of people in sports, but this is a honest, ethical, truly, caring.
Yeah. Who cares about people? Oh, yeah. But I was saying, I used to laugh at people like, oh, this won't work in small companies. I'm like, take the 10 small companies in your industry you're competing with, and I have surveyed 10 times more managers in small companies than your entire company. Okay. Every small company in every industry. We've had people in our surveys of 4 people in the company. Now, throughout all that, we've tried very hard to maintain reasonable standards of measurement to justify confidence in the study results we've come up with. Now, look, as I mentioned before, I think double-blind studies are virtually impossible in modern organizations. But we created control groups, which almost nobody does. And so we tested models of behavior that one group of managers was using against another group of managers who weren't allowed to change their behaviors. And we measured them every week to make sure they weren't cheating. We've shut down tests that we were paying a good bit of money for because of the breakdown of cohort integrity. If there's a layoff in the middle of a test, unfortunately, you have to stop because suddenly your results and retention data is not valid. People want to change what the measurements are. You can't do that and feel that it's valid. Now, we are not testing a completely 100% measurable thing. I think that the ultimate example of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle is people. So in that sense, there are some of you who will listen to this data and go, it's not enough. And I would argue, yeah, you're right. I get what your standard is and I can't meet it. And guys, I'm really sorry, but hashtag sorry, not sorry. You cannot apply the standards of PhD level science in microbiology or in physics or in chemistry or in load testing different materials to human behavior. It doesn't work. Anyway, we've run tests for exceptionally long periods of time to avoid chances of economic factors skewing the before and after results. If you only run a test for 6 months, maybe it was just a good 6 months at the company and everybody's numbers went up. Of course, that's why we have control groups. We've tested cohorts for gender, ethnic, educational, and professional experience randomness or similarity. We've employed hundreds of statisticians, surveyors, and interviewers to follow up on manager and professional behaviors during tests. One of the reasons we can't go much longer than we have tried to go is employee turnover. And that's another reason why we have big tests, because we can lose 10% and it doesn't affect the validity of the outcomes or the conclusions that we'll want to draw. In some cases, the people that we were employing, the statisticians and surveyors and so on, had knowledge of business practices. But in many cases, we deemed it better that they didn't make any qualitative assessment beyond data gathering. Now, admittedly, the internet and smartphones have changed our test measurement gathering abilities. And yeah, we'd love to have a client say, I want to use Roadmap and I want to do a test. I want to measure behavior. Happy to do it, guys. In addition to all the testing that I've been alluding to, we've also surveyed hundreds of thousands of managers over these same periods to try to understand their thinking, their desires, their knowledge, their professional skills, their behaviors, of course. In many cases, before and after surveys gave us great insight into managers' mindsets and their behavior patterns. In virtually all cases, measurements, case studies, and surveys were part of professional engagements to improve managerial and organizational performance. In many cases that we had, the surveys were designed to provide lessons learned to clients and help them to determine whether or not they should do more of this kind of work. Now look, guys, by no means are we sharing or could we ever share all the data we ever collected. Guys, some of it's been lost. Some of it we handed to the client and the company doesn't exist in its present form. And the guy or gal we gave it to is at 3 different companies removed and said, why would I ever need that old data? Some results we've lost, but it's technically possible that an individual at some clients kept copies. We do our best to outline relevant study parameters when we talk about this. In some cases, we lost data because budgets dried up and data gathering was curtailed in favor of straight training or consulting. That happened several times. Today, we're starting the process of attempting to summarize the data that relate to our work. Some of our measurement addressed internal client interests, which have no relevance elsewhere, so we won't share that. In some cases, we use client metrics, which also, by the way, don't travel well. With the results we've maintained, we do our best here and in the future to share what's relevant. Now look, the results obtained in these surveys are technically confidential work product that are owned by the client. In almost no cases that we had were there assumptions that aggregated data across hundreds of studies and surveys would lead to broader publication about generalized managerial or professional behaviors. In some of the cases, we got to own the data results, but were not allowed specific attribution, so clients remained anonymous. We always asked for that. In most cases, though, the clients owned the specific data, but did allow, in some cases, limited generic external use without association with the client. That said, I can remember sending some of it in to a publication, and I was dismissed. Because you know what? I didn't have a PhD. I didn't go to Harvard. All I had was data. And by the way, I think it's still true. I don't know how to make stuff sexy. I don't. I'm like, this is data. It conforms to all the normal principles of gathering data. But I couldn't get published. I think that's part of the reason why I've held off on submitting stuff to HBR or elsewhere lately. On the other hand, I will tell you the story that when I was speaking at Harvard a number of years ago, I was introduced and about 15 minutes in, some slouchy guy in the back raises his hand and says, why should we listen to you? You didn't go to school here. I said, well, you had to pay to get in. They paid me to come. So there you go. So guys, we're sharing this data with you now, having reduced our risk regarding this stuff to marginally zero, but it's not zero. And we do it in the interest of improving the state of management worldwide. Mike and I have felt for a long time this is an important step in our mission of making every manager effective and every professional productive.
I like it. That's a lot of good information. So let's stop here and then let's continue. I think we're maybe halfway through this. So maybe it's going to take a cast or two more. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, partner.
All right. See you later.